Previously, on Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise.
We were unable to bring him all the way in. It's already really hard to do that in the state that he was in. And of course, there were big waves, and the shark came back when we were in the water. For us, that was huge, really strong message. Much too strong. It was awful.
Did you see the sharks?
No.
Arrivé vers le bord.
No. When we're in the form of the wave, it's just a sensation you have.
C'est une sensation.
On September 19th, 2011, Matia Malela, a.k.a. Chaton, was 27 years old and away from his Reunion Island home. He'd flown to mainland France to train as a flight attendant. That's a sort of a standard gig for a certain kind of hardcore surfer because travel to famous overseas surf spots is a crucial part of the lifestyle, and travel's not cheap. But September 19th, of course, is the day two sharks killed Raton's friend, Mathieu Schiller, at Boucan Canot. And do you remember, so were you in, when Mathieu was killed, were you in Paris? Or were you in France?
No, I was in near the Alps. Yeah, I was like, it was weird because I was driving along people that I didn't know in a car, car sharing, you know, and so I was with these people that were taking me from the southwest to the Alps, and we were on the motorway, so like everybody's minding, well, maybe we were talking about things, you know, getting to know each other during the trip, and suddenly I get a text message, and my friend from Reunion Island tells me there was a shark attack. And Mathieu is dead. So I was like, do I start the subject with the guys in the car? I chose to just not talk about it because I knew they wouldn't be helpful. Because they couldn't imagine what was going on, and so I just held it for a few hours. And then when I got to the place where I was going, I met with a friend that I was supposed to sleep at his place. And it's a friend from Reunion Island, very close to Mathieu. So we had the chance to mourn together, you know, and live, you know, well, maybe we drank some beers or whatever. I don't remember, but we were following the news on TV and on the computer and trying to get some news. So we were together. It was precious to have a friend from Reunion with whom I could share the moment, yeah.
I'm sharing this conversation with Raton because that experience of his getting such awful news so far from home, and that decision to abandon career plans and fly back to be with friends, as it just says so much about how people in communities react and grow and change when violent death stalks and kills their friends and peers in the place they call home, to the point where nobody can pretend anymore that it couldn't possibly happen to them. I'm Dan Duane, and this is Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise, Episode 7, How Much Fear is Too Much?
So we were totally traumatized, you know, like shocked. And but at the same time, the ocean turns into like something really peaceful and changes totally, you know. So you're like, what are we going to do? Are we going to stay on the ground for the whole summer? Like cowards, you know, and or, you know, frightened like a chicken, you know, whatever. Or are we going to struggle and try to get our territory back, you know, if we consider that the ocean is our territory? But certainly the surfing spots were our territory and we wanted to get them back. So some people were too scared to go back. And because of my background, I think because of my character and all that, I was on the side of the guys who wanted to go back. So I started to go free diving first, swimming, you know, like when the water became like clear, the ocean became smooth and quiet.
Raton eventually met Fred Bile, that famous Belgian freediver who came down to Reunion to help a scientific study that was trying to put acoustic tracking tags on sharks. Bile's deal had been trying to swim underwater holding his breath and put those tracking tags on sharks by hand.
And he said one thing. He said, I would never be a surfer because he's too afraid of sharks being a shark.
The freediver said this.
Yeah, the freediver, yeah. He said he's too afraid. He would be too afraid of sharks if he was a surfer because he knows that a surfer is 100%, well, exposed to the shark because he doesn't watch underneath. Yeah, he said... he said, if I had to be a surfer on this island, I would watch underneath. That's the minimum I would do, you know? Mm-mm. And so that's what I started to do. Take a mask, you know, and look around. So, and even doing this, you don't see them. But at least they see you. They feel that there's people around watching, and they don't come.
You would go out, you want to go surfing, so you would bring a mask and go out and swim down to look around and then surf for a while and then go look down again, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm. For example, you take a wave. Well, you go to the spot. So first, when you go to the spot, you look around. You get to the lineup.
The lineup in surf lingo, by the way, is the optimal spot out in the water to catch waves. So it's where surfers tend to, you know, line up and wait.
You've made sure that the water is clear and there's no sharks around when you went at the lineup. So then you get to the lineup, you choose your wave, surf your wave. And then when you go back, you swim and watch underneath while you go back. And you repeat the process.
Jean-François Nativelle thought this was insane.
Raton, you know, is a playboy of the shark crisis. Every girl loves Raton. When I said to everybody, don't go in the water, Raton said, go in the water. You have tried to surfing with glasses in a Maverick or in Malibu, or I don't know, it's crazy. If the shark arrives, you can show her and say, stay, shark, stop, don't attack me, because I saw you and I'm strong, okay? Stay at your place. No, you know, you can play with human life, and Raton play with human life in this time.
Local authorities didn't agree. In fact, they thought Raton might be onto something. So they announced a pilot program funding surfers to become what they called vigie requin, or shark lookouts.
Pretty much they said, who want to go swim with the sharks you know, and earn a living, you know, by doing it? But like, he was like, we would get like 800 euros a month. 800 euros a month is like $1,000 a month. So it was like a contract paid by the government, not full time. So that's why it was so cheap. But at the same time, they send you like swimming with sharks in an island where there's a big problem happening, you know. So we should have been paid like 5 times or 10 times this, you know.
Yeah, especially considering they were not allowed to carry spear guns.
But we said okay, because it was so cool, you know. They just said, you know, get a full wetsuit, get a mask, and go underneath water. The first protocol was a guy on a stand-up paddle and a guy freediving.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at this point in the story, it helps to remember that every major shark attack of 2011 had occurred in that resort zone on the northern portion of the West Coast. So a lot of surfers from that resort zone had already started migrating south toward a surf spot called Trois Bassins, or Three Ponds, a very gentle wave where the water's clear. So that's where Raton and the other shark lookouts did a lot of their work. As a public safety measure,
there had never been an attack on this spot. It's 10, it's like 12 to 15 kilometers away from the place where the first attacks happened. Okay, south of it. So we thought, to reassure us, we thought, well, the attacks happened north of here. They won't come down here, you know. Because they are stupid sharks, they are going to stay over there. And they are not going to come and bother us here. So we were trying to remain confident with this stupid belief. Winter of 2012, we were like working on this spot for 6 months. So we gained confidence.
At least until June and July of 2012. When the southern hemisphere winter brought bigger waves and rains and, therefore, at least some of the time, murky water.
So when winter came, our boss, the surf instructors, they said, well, we know that you can't practice the job as in summer, because now most of the time the water is murky. Either you stay on the shore and watch from the beach, or you just go surfing, free surfing, and you pretend you're watching. For once in our life, we are paid to surf, you know, so let's go.
But even as Raton did that, he got to worrying. The whole deal with murky water, right, was that bull sharks can hide in it.
So I was like, actually, you're putting yourself in a very dangerous position. You're in the water, but you know that you shouldn't be in the water. The only reason why you're in the water is first because you're paid for it, and second because you think that it's not going to happen here. I had this feeling that I could die instantly. Well, I was looking underneath.
Raton felt that terror acutely On July 23rd, 2012, when he was out doing the lookout thing for some surf lessons, and the instructor called the lessons off.
And then the surf instructor said, okay, we finished the class. I gotta go because my girlfriend is annoying on the beach. So I said, okay, let's go back home.
Back ashore, Raton rode his bike. He's a huge cyclist, this guy. He rode his bike up through a parking lot and said hello to friends of a young surfer named Alexandre Rassiga, who just hit the water.
So he looked up to me and the rest of our generation. And he was like, yeah, these guys are brave because they keep on surfing. They work for the lookout thing. So they help people to surf, to keep on surfing. So he was like, yeah, they are cool guys. So he wanted to do the same thing, you know, keep on surfing, not stay on the ground because at this moment, maybe three out of four surfers don't surf anymore. Either because their wife doesn't want them to go back, or because they pretend it's their wife that doesn't want actually it's because they're afraid. So some of the most motivated guys, those who don't want to wait, they've forgot it, you know, just like Alex, you know, and they don't want to think about it, you know. They're like, let's go, you know. There was surfing just before us. It's like 3 p.m. We can go and take a few waves, you know. So that's what Alex thought that day. So he was like, Raton was just in the water. They were looking for the surf lessons. You know, nothing happened. It's all right. We just go for an hour and get a few waves, you know.
It's not just because he's my son, but he was a very handsome young man, almost like a model. He was so good looking. I'm his dad.
That's Jean Rassiga, Alexander Rassiga's father. Jean told me that he'd always worried about his son surfing.
I don't know why. It was this kind of apprehension, in fact, that was always there. So I was always scared when he was surfing, yes. Every time he went off, myself and his mother, we were always worried. Every year, right up until the day when the telephone rang to give us the bad news.
Je suis rentré du travail.
I came home from work. I was alone at home, and my phone rang. It was about 4:30 p.m.
Je travaille dans le centre de formation des pompiers.
So I work in the training center for firemen. So all the firemen of Réunion Island, they know me. So wife's brother is also a fireman, and they weren't brave enough to call me, so they called him instead, because he's a fireman. So my brother-in-law called me and said, your son is here. So I was on my own. I put the phone down and I just said to myself, it's up. And when you go to the beach, we have this hope that it's going to be somebody else, that there's been some mistake, that you hope it's going to be somebody else under that sheet. So when I arrived, there was the head of the squad, the fireman squad, who was waiting for me there. And he came and he took me in his arms and he walked me down the little footpath that takes you to the beach from the parking lot. And the police were there as well as the firefighters. And he was already in a body bag, in fact, when I arrived. They opened the bag so that I could confirm that it was indeed him. And it was him. The years go by, but it really is as if it happened yesterday for me.
I have kids of my own, two teenagers, both girls. And that conversation with Jean Rassiga absolutely killed me. I felt like I was talking to a potentiality in the heart of every parent everywhere. Just your absolute worst nightmare. But I'm also a surfer, so I could also feel how much these shark attacks were striking deeper and deeper into the community. Because, see, that whole West Coast surf community, they'd already lost the whole resort zone. Well, they'd moved south to Trois-Bassins, and now they'd lost Trois-Bassins. And what was south of Trois-Bassins? The most famous break on all of Réunion Island, one of the most famous on Earth, Saint-Leu, in a town of the same name. In fact, the mayor of Saint-Leu became so worried that he offered local fishermen €2 per kilogram, straight out of city coffers, for the meat of any shark caught in nearby waters. But then federal authorities stepped in and bigfooted this poor guy, the mayor, calling his plan illegal and dispatching police and Coast Guard to arrest any fishermen who tried to participate, and making surfers now frantic with fear. That fear reached a fever pitch on August 5th when a tough Saint-Leu local named Fabien Bougeon, made in the shade member of the Saint-Leu Surf Pack, went out for a surf at sunset. Fabien wasn't up for being interviewed, but I met a South African named Davy Stoke who has known Fabien, or Fabs as he calls him, for decades.
Yeah, I mean, he was and is still just a fantastic surfer, and he really charges and always very low-key. And yeah, there's a word for it. It's called sauvage, but it doesn't really describe it because that's just being savage. But he's not savage at all. He's just very, what would we call it? Not intimate, but I mean, he just keeps to himself, you know. My good friend Luke, a really good Australian surfer, hardcore charger from West Oz, from Carnarvon. And he was next to Fabs. And he just said to me, geez, we were sitting there. There were only two of them out. It was late evening, and this thing hit Fubs, and I took him down. And he said, I didn't move a limb. I mean, this thing came around and hit him again, and Fubs just came up, like, fighting and kicking. And he said, geez, Davey, I didn't do a damn thing. I was just in shock, and this thing looked like it was just intent on killing him.
Fabien told a Paris newspaper that he was just sitting there on his surfboard when the shark charged head-on.
Half of its body was out on the water, crushed on mine, my calf between his fangs.
The impact knocked Fabien off his board.
I was in 1.50 meters of water and couldn't see anything. There was a cloud of blood in front of me, and this huge thing, this huge mass of gray-brown color with this wide mouth. It was pulling on my leg like a piece of fish with sharp sideways movement of its head. I could see it tearing, going to shred, but I felt no pain.
Fabien fought back while the shark severed his right foot and his right hand.
But there is this survival instinct. Where does it come from? I have no idea. Anyway, I keep fighting.
With his remaining hand, Fabien grabbed the shark's gills and yanked like hell until the shark let go. Witnesses told me Fabien got himself back onto his surfboard and jammed his right wrist, the one missing a hand, up into his chin to stop the bleeding, and then used the other arm to paddle himself toward shore.
Yes, well, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know how he did it. I mean, you can just imagine your foot off, your freaking hand off. I mean, you know, blood pissing everywhere. I mean, where do you actually stop bleeding?
Davy Stokes' Australian friend watched all of this and was traumatized.
And he just said, fuck it, Davy, I didn't move a fucking inch. This thing hit him and fucking came around and hit him again, and it was intent on killing him. And I just shat myself. And then he kind of like paddled him in, but you know, a couple of times later we'd go partying and you know, completely off our tits, he'd just be going, fuck, I mean, I really don't feel good about what I did. I was going, hey, Luke, it was like a war situation, you know, and how you react is nobody else's business but yours.
Fabien came ashore in front of a small concrete building that houses the Saint-Leu Surf Club, the very belly of the beast for Réunion surf culture. I dropped by there one day and I heard the president of that club, Alain Courtois, say he'd watched all of this.
Yeah, we saw him to come out.
You saw him come out of the water?
He come back by himself.
By himself?
Yeah.
Wow.
With one leg and one arm.
He got himself back to the shore with one leg and one arm? Right here?
Yeah.
The guy is a legend.
Yeah, a legend. A warrior.
Yeah.
And
I read that he resisted the shark. That
he fought with the shark, and he was the thing he do was clever, because after the bite, he get bite twice.
Yeah.
Okay. He lost his leg at that place, and he, you know, he put his leg like under his, you know, for the blood
to
stop the blood.
Wow.
Yeah, stop the blood.
Wow.
And paddling with one arm to come here on the rocks.
Wow.
Wow. That's heavy.
That's a hard man. That's heavy. Yeah, that's heavy. That is heavy. Yeah.
And nice.
Alain told me also that the sheer frequency of shark attacks by that point was becoming overwhelming. Eric Dargent, Eddie Aubert, Mathieu Schiller.
Trabassin, Alexandre, Bassiga, and Fabien here. And it was like a bim, 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 bim.
And can I ask you a question, you guys? When there were so many attacks, it's such a short period of time that year, what did that feel like to live through that, to have this kind of acceleration in numbers of them?
It was a nightmare for us. Oh. It was a nightmare because we were surfing every day, you know, with no problem with sharks.
Yeah.
And in one day, just start in Saint-Gilles, and everywhere attack or people die, and said it was a nightmare for us. And many of surfers stopped the surf. They stopped.
Yeah, yeah. Jean-François completely stopped.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. In one day, it was no more people in the water.
Wow.
Between the, you know, to see your friend at hospital or go to cemetery, and it was too much for us. No, it was too much.
So much, in fact, that surfer response took on a quality of violent desperation. Jean-François Nativelle reprised his Eric Dargent performance by riding out on another fishing boat, landing a 650-pound bull shark, cutting it open, and finding, unfortunately for him and other surfers, not human remains, but 13 dead bull shark babies. Bad optics from a conservation standpoint, and kind of freaky from a shark proliferation standpoint. The French government did lean slightly toward helping by announcing a new scientific study, catching and killing a few sharks, to see if it might be safe to re-legalize the commercial sale of shark meat in markets. But that got newspapers quoting the big French shark expert Bernard Serret again, saying, imagine a reunionese who's going to eat a bull shark and thereby might eat the flesh of a surfer. It's ridiculous and unthinkable. So now surfers planned a protest march on the office of the Marine Reserve because they were convinced that all this insane resistance to helping them, all this unwillingness to do anything to protect anybody who used the water, was the fault of the reserve. But then law enforcement agencies somehow got wind of this planned protest and tipped off reserve officials, including Soroya Issop Mahmoud.
We had been warned the day before by the RG, the Renseignements Généraux, or the intelligence services, that there was going to be a demonstration in front of the reserve the next day, and they said that the police would therefore be present in order to provide security.
Dozens of federal riot police in full-on riot gear got to the reserve early and hid inside the office building in case the wild surfer horde like stormed the building. About 100 surfers did show up, and they were furious and really upset, and they screamed mean stuff and threw eggs and like shook the locked gates.
C'est notre tradition. 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 la mer, l'océan pour nous, l'Allemagne.
When those gates broke open, police surged forward and blocked surfers from entering. So the surfers retreated, regrouped, and 4 days later staged a second protest, this time at federal government offices, with 500 outraged surfers and fishermen complaining that every time they caught anything nowadays, a shark would suddenly appear out of nowhere and gobble their catch right off the line. And still, elite opinion in Paris remained ferociously against anyone who wanted to hurt sharks. Sea Shepherd posted a new public letter damning that mayor, you know, the one who tried to authorize shark fishing, and telling him he ought to go after violent husbands for domestic abuse if he was really worried about public safety. Even Charlie Hebdo, the famous Parisian satirical magazine, jumped on the anti-surfer dogpile with what it called an official fatwa against the surfers of Reunion Island.
What do we need more, surfers or sharks? The surfer keeps the surfboat and donut industries afloat. The shark doesn't just clean oceans of bums, it also cleans them of hassles. Long live the bulldog shark, the tiger shark, all the big two things that grind up smug wankers before shitting them out.
3 days after Charlie Hebdo issued its fatwa, on August 15th, that new French government study, the one aimed at testing the edibility of shark meat, right, to see if they could, like, reopen the commercial shark fishery and solve this nightmare that way, they caught a single shark. And this was such an affront to the head of the local chapter of the Brigitte Bardot Foundation, a guy named Didier Deron, that he told local media he would now deliberately swim all by himself way out to sea to prove it was safe.
And I said, well, the only way, I think, to show people that the sea isn't dangerous and that the sharks were not necessarily man-eaters was simply to go in the water, to go swimming out to the open sea for several kilometers, for several hours at a time, and to come back alive without a scratch. There is quite an unusual mindset in Reunion because surfers here consider themselves owners of the wave and owners of the ocean. So the reasoning of Mr. Nativelle and the surfers is to say, I am the owner and anybody who disturbs me, I will kill them. And of course, if we listen to them in 50 years' time, there won't be a single fish left in the ocean. There won't be any sharks left because we will have killed them all.
On August 26th, Didier Deron swam as promised and finished his long ocean swim right at the Saint-Louis Surf Club, where Fabien Bougeon hauled himself out of the water, missing a hand and a foot. Deron also had journalists waiting for him on the shore to cover his swim, right? Meant to say, hey, look, I proved it's not dangerous. And it turned out there was a party going on at the surf club at that very moment.
There were hundreds of people. Even when I was still in the water, they were insulting me with a loudspeaker. And when I came out of the water, they started pushing me around and to try to strike me. All I did was to go swimming on my own in the ocean. I was threatened all the time. I was telephoned at home. My car was vandalized 6 times in 1 year. And my insurance company would no longer insure me because I had to repaint my car 3 times. The insurance company no longer wished to insure me on my car.
Somebody in the surfer community, in other words, or more than several, snapped, like just went psycho and started playing dirty. And this is when authorities realized they were about to have a guerrilla war on their hands. So what do? Host a conference, invite big-time global shark attack experts to fly in from all over the world, confab, share notes, and figure out, once and for all, what the hell everybody was supposed to do.
Coming up next on Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise.
I had been brought in to do a show and tell for this whole presentation, get roundly hated by everyone, conspiracized, and just for this one moment so the mayor could then essentially put the kibosh on the biotope report that we put together and present her own report, which was kill the sharks.
Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise is a production of Hyperobject Industries, Little Everywhere, and Sony Music Entertainment. It's written, reported, and hosted by me, Dan Duane. Executive produced by Adam McKay, Claire Slaughter, Harry Nelson, Dan Gallucci, and Jane Marie. Produced and engineered by Joy Sanford, Mike Richter, Dan Gallucci, and Jane Marie, with help from Zaylee Mahone. Edited by Dan Gallucci and Jane Marie. All final mixes by Mike Richter. Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise was interpreted by James Christie and Pauline Chardin. Special thanks to all of our voice actors, Fred Giel, Sandrine Ristello, Giulio Mendi, and Marley Otto, and to the many people on Reunion Island that helped make all of this possible.